Hey guys, welcome back to the Shintaro Higashi Show with Peter Yu. How are you doing, Peter? Good to see
I'm
you.
Good. I know. I know. And people are telling me how you sounded so sad in the...
Oh, dude, I was sad. It was a very dark episode. I was talking about my judo career and reflecting, and it was just me being sad. Mostly the sadness came from you not being here. Just so
Well, I missed you too. But, you know, now that project's out of the way. So
awesome.
Yeah, well, we're back on track. So what are we talking today?
Today I kind of wanted to go through the way I learned judo and my senseis, my mentors and my teachers. That's what I wanted to start with today.
Yeah. So another personal episode, huh?
Personal. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure this is helpful, you know, because it's really a mentality about learning more than anything.
Right. Sounds good. So
let's
start from the top, you know, for your first sensei, dad.
First sensei, my dad. Yeah. 3 years old. I was in the dojo. Right. He didn't like explicitly teach me. He had a very unique teaching style.
Right.
Like, go figure it out was sort of his main thing.
Uh-huh.
And just being in judo, in the dojo, that was first and foremost. And then if you're in the sport, you're going to learn it no matter what if you're around good people. That was his entire philosophy.
Uh-huh. So his focus was trying to like recruit good students in his dojo to surround you, I guess, with good people.
Yeah. Like, making judo fun.
Right.
Was his first and foremost thing with me.
Right.
I remember him telling me explicitly once, like, I've seen all my judo friends pushing judo onto their kid and yelling at him and teaching him and, you know, beating them into submission to be better champions. And he's like, I've never seen it work.
Right.
You know, and I've seen it work, right? I've seen it work, but it takes a very special type of a kid
to
accept that kind of a teaching.
Right.
So he took a different approach with me. He was very, very relaxed, took me to the dojo, made me love it, associated going to judo with fun.
Right, right. I think, so, yeah. What you said is like I've seen it and I've seen it personally too, like in, you know, kids getting pushed to the edge, like in, and then a lot of times I totally get it why they would just quit in high school or something.
Yeah.
You know,
dude, I saw the most savage 14-year-old once. He was a small kid, but he was beating grown adults, like throwing them standing sode. And he wasn't like a big kid like me.
Right.
He was like a small kid.
Just very skilled.
95 pounds throwing grown adults.
Right, right.
You know, and he had a bunch of injuries by the time he was 14, 15 years old. Quit judo. Never came back, you know?
Yeah. That's very sad. It's
very sad. He could have been the champ, you know?
Right. So, yeah, I was actually... I must say, like, you know, it's pleasantly surprised me that your dad didn't take that approach and then you actually grew to love judo.
Like I mean, there's a lot of times where he was strict and tough with me, right? Mm. Going to tournaments when I didn't want to go, right? Yelling at me when I did something that was not supposed to be done, you know?
So it's like, he tried to strike the balance, I guess. You can't just,
Yeah, once, you know, I was, you know, 14, 15 years old, things started getting a little bit more serious.
Right.
Right. And then if we're taking these trips to go to these travel tournaments, you know, he wanted me to be prepared, right?
Right.
So make sure you're putting in the proper preparation, sportsmanship. These were things that it was like he would never be okay with me not following through on those things, you know?
Right, right.
Like I lost once and I was so pissed. I got into it with this guy from Georgia.
Right.
And then I lost a close one. And then so I took my judo gi off and I threw it, you know?
Oh, okay. Oh, like,
yeah.
Like what, during the like after right after the match on the mat?
Yeah, yeah. Like as I lost, like you know, the guy was being a dick the whole time, and you know, I may have given him the finger. I may have taken my gi off and threw it.
Oh man!
Right.
And your dad was in the stands.
My dad was in the stands, and he was furious. He was furious.
Yeah. Right.
I was
right.
a teenager back then. Dumb teenager. Yeah, you know.
So it wasn't just about. It wasn't just about being good at judo for him. It just
holistic view. Sportsmanship. Yeah. All that stuff was a big part of it, right?
Right.
His biggest thing was like, yeah, you go out there. It's okay if you lost, right? Mm-hmm. If you lost because you were scared and you ran away or you didn't compete properly or something like that, if you lost because I wasn't prepared,
right?
Then he would be really mad, you know? But
right,
if I went out there and just went against somebody that was much better than me and they slammed me, he'd be like, you know what you want for it. Right.
Right.
Let's go back and fix what we did, you know, what you made mistakes on and let's learn from it. And he was pretty cool about it.
Nice. So then what kind of pointers did he give you like, because he seems like he was pretty hands off and then let you figure things out on your own. But
yeah,
at the same time, after tournaments, he did give you pointers or things.
Sometimes it was kind of tricky for him to give me real pointers because I wasn't very accepting of a lot of the feedback that, you know, I probably should have accepted, especially when it's difficult with your dad, right?
Right.
You go out there and you lose against somebody and then you're all pissed off and you go home and he's like, all right, we're going to watch the videos. We're going to watch film. Oh, I don't want to watch film.
Yeah.
So like we would argue about that, you know, and we'd have different reasons why this person was beating me.
Right.
You know, and a lot of the times my father's thing was like, hey, you're not working hard enough. He's outworking you. He's in the gym, you know, every day. He's lifting. He's doing judo 5 days a week. You're not working hard enough. You lifting hard enough? Are you strong enough? Are you fast enough? You know, all these different things, right? Mm-hmm. It always kind of came back to that as opposed to like, look at this right side versus left side situation. Right? Mm-hmm. You're fighting for inside position and, you know, he's crushing that hand and there's a strong post because, you know, it was never like that.
I guess that's like the feedback he got growing up, like just the traditional.
Yeah. He said he never got technical feedback when he was growing up doing the Kukushkan system, because I remember one time the head coach came up to me and said, Higashi, go like this, you gotta pull like this, and then that was it. That was the only feedback he's gotten in college, and he said that's what it was, you know. And Kukushkan University is like that. You have 100 people in the room, right? You're just putting in so much time.
So it's
the guys who are the best in the room are going to get better and better and better, right?
Right, because there's just so much talent in the room and so much depth that the top will just naturally become the best in the world, I guess.
And there's many different coaching styles, teaching styles,
right?
And I've encountered many different coaches and teachers who specifically taught. I've had wrestling coaches, you know, in the New York Athletic Club room who would sit me down and give me a dissertation for 2 hours straight. And then I realized, oh man, I spent 2 hours in practice today and I didn't even break a sweat because this guy was just teaching me everything he knew about stuff. And was I able to use some of that stuff? Like, maybe.
Right.
You know, but that was like on the opposite side of the spectrum. I think you need a healthy balance of both.
Right.
But my father was much more get in the room, work hard, train hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you do good work, we're going to have fun. You know, we're going to get some ice cream after this.
I see.
Right? Kind of like that. It's like, hey, man, we're going to go to Florida. We're going to compete in the Junior Olympics or the Junior Nationals. We're just going to hang out and go to Disney World. But you have to do good. All right? If you don't do good, we're just going to get on a plane. We're going to go right home. No family vacation. Right?
Did you go to Disney World?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. He would never. Nice.
I'll tell you the best one. Yeah.
I'll tell you the best one where he bribed me. I kind of didn't want to do this. As a little kid, right? I didn't want to go to all three junior nationals because they have three.
Because of the junior nationals.
You have the Junior Olympics. There's three. So if you win all three, you become this triple crown champion situation.
Right.
And then at the very end, I was like, man, I don't want to go. You know, I'm like, God damn, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, listen, I'm not supposed to bring this up. Your mother is very against this, but if you win, I'll get you a Super Nintendo.
Oh,
nice. Then you got to go. You got to fight hard. You have to win.
Right.
I was like, really?
Right.
And, you know, I think he didn't really like think that I was going to win, you know, because my mom was so against that.
Super Nintendo.
Video games. Yeah, Super Nintendo, but then I won it, right? I got really lucky that year, and it just, the stars were aligned. And
right.
You drew the right people. Like, I was losing in the finals, too. Like, I was getting ragdolled. I was down by, like, Wazari 2 Yukos or something, you know, back when that's like, I was getting ragdolled. And then very, very end, I like clipped the kid with the Kochi as he went to try to counter me backwards and he went straight to his back.
Oh, man, that's what they both.
I looked at the ref, I looked at my dad, I was like, did I just do it? Am I getting a Super Nintendo? Yeah. It was the best. Yeah.
Man, and then they actually got you.
They got it, but then it was very short lived.
What happened? Very short-lived. What happened?
I got in trouble at school. My mom threw it away.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I got in trouble at school. My mom tossed it, but she didn't really toss it. She hid it in the attic, but I would find it.
I see.
And I would make a deal with my father. Like, if I had a good practice, I could go up and get it or something. And then one day, my mom just had enough. I had like a school. I did something in school. I think I got... It was like in a snowball fight or something. And I hit this kid in the head with a snowball. But it was like an icy snowball and his mom or something like that.
Right.
And then my mom was like, that's it. And then
it was the forever garbage.
Yeah, the garbage man came because I thought she was bluffing. She literally walked up to the garbage man and goes, "You have kids, right?" And guy goes, "Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I have four kids. You know, they're X years old." And my mom goes, like, "Here's
Super Nintendo." Super Nintendo.
And just handed him all the video consoles, the cartridges, everything. And I remember, like, standing out there. It was, like, Saturday morning or Friday morning or something. I was, like, crying in my underwear. Like, "Mom, you can't do this to me." You know, my mom's was like, "Nope, I told you many times. You know, you keep getting in trouble in school." And then she gave it away.
She was a tough sensei.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My mom was tough. My mom was a lot tougher than my dad. Yeah. That's partly why my dad probably couldn't be strict at the dojo. He's like, "Okay, I can't have his mom being, like, you know, really strict. And then I can't have him at the dojo and being really strict at the dojo, too." There's a nice little balance there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I guess in a way, you know, those your parents as two senseis kind of balance the whole thing. Yeah, thing out. Yeah,
yeah.
So then eventually you, I guess, kind of grew out of your dad's tutelage in a way, I guess.
When you were getting, somewhat. Little by little, the older I got, like, he sent me to Kukushkan High School.
Right, right.
Over the summer when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was, like, sort of my first way out of the home dojo.
Right.
You know, and I was already kind of experiencing a new teaching method through my wrestling coach in high school. Right. And he had a interesting teaching style, and he taught everything very generic stuff because he himself didn't wrestle, but he was a great coach. Right. He was a good physical education teacher.
He's not a wrestler himself.
Oh, he wasn't a wrestler himself, but, you know, he was a great coach. He was just like a good,
That's amazing.
Yeah, wrestling, women's swimming, and all this stuff. And he was just like a physical education teacher.
Right?
So he taught me all the generic wrestling stuff, and I listened to him.
Right? I see.
And then I also went to the New York Athletic Club to wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
I started going to New York Athletic Club to do judo also with Mr. Matsumura, who's my father's kohai.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, I'm starting to get exposed to different ideas and... You know, going to Kokushikan University, though, high school in the summers, though, that really sort of changed the game.
That's I'm actually curious about your wrestling coach in high school.
Yeah,
sure. And then, you know, we'll go to other coaches too, of course. But because it's interesting to me, because, you know, when I first started wrestling, actually, I never experienced this, but the year before I joined, they didn't have a coach, so they asked some random substitute teacher to.
Yeah,
coach, and he's not a wrestler, but he was trying to, you know, make the team, help out the team.
Yeah, I mean,
didn't work out too well, but I'm very curious how your coach, you know, managed the team, and then you're saying he was a good great coach. So what kind of things stood out with his coaching methods? Like, it'll be tough. Yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely a tricky person to coach, I guess.
Right.
Because I came in with a slew of background in throwing in judo.
Right, right, right.
So he didn't really have, like, the technical thing to, you know, integrate the two things, right?
If he had
Greco-Roman experience or, like, threading that underhook and then, connecting or shooting a single, climbing up the body, all that stuff, like, technical side.
Yeah.
It probably would have helped a lot. But, you know, he didn't. So he said, "Hey, this is a generic way that wrestling is taught. Here's the head pop setup. Here's this setup. Here's the chop. Here's the double. Here's a single." And you're just drilling it in practice, right?
Mm.
And then every now and then he'll be like, "Listen, man, you have to learn how to wrestle, but use your judo. Use your judo," right? And he's like, "How do you do it?" He goes, "You know, maybe when the guy, like, shoots in on a single, you pull his head up, and then now you're, like, locked up, and then you go for a throw."
Right.
So I started just doing it more in practice.
I see. I see.
And the more I did it, the more I figured it out. And I had the luxury of, you know, morning I woke up and went to the gym. My dad took me to the gym at 6 in the morning, right? I went to school like a regular schoolboy. Mm. And then afterwards, I would go to wrestling practice. And then after wrestling practice, my mom would pick me up and take me to judo.
Mm. Wow. Right?
So, yeah. And then sometimes Tuesdays and Thursdays, even if I didn't have judo, I would go into the city and wrestle at the New York Athletic Club. So this is during the wrestling season. Right? Mm. So I got a lot of grappling time during the wrestling season.
I see.
So... sometimes I would, like, drill the regular stuff in practice, and I would be thinking about it and say, how could I combine the two? And then the coach, high school coach, would kind of give me ideas. And then I would go to the New York Athletic Club. And then sometimes I would see these guys and I would just ask them, right? Hey, man, like, there was a Greco-Roman coach there.
Oh, okay.
He was great. And he kind of gave me some tips. Like, how do I, you know, use judo in a wrestling context and things like that.
Right. I see.
So, yeah.
So did your wrestling coach have a... So he was a more like a inspirational figure. Like what was his?
Yeah, he was very inspirational guy. Yeah, right. He was very charismatic. He was very strong, and he was like a big dude, bald head, like a tough, hard nosed physical education coach. Right, been a phys ed teacher his whole life, and he really liked me. And he really liked me, and then he would say things that were like all these little isms, right? About like never giving up and training hard, and right? And you know, he was such a great communicator that like even when I was feeling in a way like doing sprints, or even I used to like run and lift on my own, like I would hear him telling me like, man, you gotta train hard, grind. And then one time I remember he gave me this video cassette of Iowa the Season.
Oh,
it's a documentary
about Iowa the University. Iowa,
Iowa wrestling season, and boy, was it! He was like, "Watch it!" He's like, "That's high end wrestling. That's like high level wrestling, right? You'll see how tough these guys are. That's how you need to be. You got to be tough." Mm. So I went home and I watched it, and I literally took everything literally, just absorbed it. Right,
right, right.
And there was a scene where it's like, hey, you know, person's on bottom. Like, you're not just letting him go. You're not just cutting him loose, giving him one. Like, you're doing a hard mat return, boom, one time, just to let him know that you let him go. Right? And that, and I took that to, like, heart. Like, I was like, oh, that's what I have to do. So I was wrestling this kid in a match, and kid had no business, like, doing.
Right.
He's good. He was trying, but wasn't an experienced kid.
Right.
And every time I took him down, not just letting him go because I was, you know, I didn't ride. I just pick him up and slam him. Boom, mat return, and then let him go. Mat return, let him go. And my coach is like, what are you doing, man? Like, what are you doing?
Oh, the coach said that.
He was like, I was like, oh, what? I just watched that thing you sent me, and
that's what they told me to.
He's like, that's horrible sportsmanship. Like, I don't never want to see that again, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a little bit of a conflict there. But, you know, he was that kind of a guy, right? He was like always in my face, pushing me.
I guess it's high school sports. So like the most important thing is to instill in the kids about this work ethic, discipline, more than just like techniques and whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I was very good at judo and wrestling naturally right around that time. And, you know, it's kind of not fair too, because I grew up doing judo since I was three.
Right.
So now by the time I'm in high school, freshman, sophomore year, I've already had all this experience.
Yeah.
I'm wrestling most of these kids who have never really wrestled before.
Yeah, like me.
We're hobbies.
Like, we're just, just picking it up.
So, naturally, like, I had a huge advantage.
Right, you know? Right.
And I'm going in there, and every now and then, there would be somebody that would challenge me,
yeah,
you know, in a match. And, you know, I had a pretty decent record in high school, like over 100 wins and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I would feel a little bit scared, right?
Oh, because this.
And I felt, And I was like, oh, man, I don't know if I could beat this guy. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, losing a match and then just being like, ah, you know what? Like, I didn't fake a knee injury, but I tweaked my knee just a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to go out like, oh, this kid actually beat me. So, like, went down. I was like, oh, man, I tweaked my knee. My knee hurts. That's why I freaking lost. And then my coach was like, don't ever do that. That's garbage. That's trash. You know it. He got in a single. He took you down. It's because you're not working on your defense. And he, like, kept me honest, right?
That's good.
So, was really good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I had this relationship with this guy where I could tell him, like, hey, man, I don't know. I'm, like, scared of this guy shooting low singles on me because I don't know how to defend it. And, you know, truthfully, that coach didn't know how to defend some of these things either.
Right.
Because he's not
a wrestler.
He's not wrestling. You know, and there's no YouTube how to defend a low single.
Right.
I remember, like, sophomore year, you know, state qualifier, I lost because this guy wouldn't tie up with me. He's just running all over the place, like away from me, wouldn't touch me, got to his knees and shooting in on low singles. And I've never experienced that before.
Right.
So he took me down once, I get back up, he took me down twice, and I'm already like kind of broken. I'm like, man, how do I beat this guy?
Right.
And then I lost.
Wouldn't tie up with you. Yeah,
so I was like runner up in the county, which sucked that year, you know, and then obviously I learned after that. But yeah, he was a good coach for that reason, right?
He was, I guess, like, he was tough at the same time he let you feel comfortable enough to be honest and vulnerable with them.
So, you know, he was a great coach to me. Like, I will always be grateful. And then my college wrestling coach was actually similar too.
Bob
Gaudenzi. He was another one that wasn't the best wrestler, but you could tell that he cared about me, right? He really cared about me, and I was a real I don't want to say, you know, screw up back in college, but I was like hanging out too much. I couldn't be controlled. You know, I was doing whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. Always getting in trouble. I got kicked off the team. I got kicked out the dorms. You know, it was kind of a little bit of a mess. But he cared about me, you know, and he cared about me. And we had a great relationship. And we would talk about, you know, things far beyond wrestling, right? What do you want to do? You know, how are we going to get there? You know, ask him about career and his life. And, you know, we would just spend hours just chit-chatting in his office sometimes. You know what I mean?
That's amazing.
So he was another one. Yeah. So he was another one that was a great coach. And I remember, like, the team got in trouble. I got in trouble. Right. And I was on the verge of getting kicked out of school.
Right.
And then he was sitting down with me and he's like, Shantar, man. He's like, what are you doing? It's like, what are you doing? Right. And I thought he was going to like start yelling at me and getting mad. And he's like, you're breaking my heart, man. He's like, you're breaking my heart. You know, and I just like was like, man, I got to be better. You know, I just got to be better.
Because you don't want to disappoint these people who care about
you. Oh, so. I was so I disappointed him. Like, I can't even, you know, I really disappointed him.
Oh, yeah.
But I was a decent wrestler in college too. You know? And so like having a guy like that in the room who's looking out for me.
Right.
Like, come on, man, you can do it. Come on, man, you could do it. Right. That made me train harder.
Right.
You know, and whether that ultimately led to me being very successful in grappling, I don't know. But it really was, you know, each and every one of these people who've taught me had like a big part in my development as a human being and in my grappling style too.
Right.
You know,
man, it's like watching Coach Carter or something. All this like
a little bit. Yeah.
This except, coach.
Yeah.
These coaches are like, I mean, I think that's very important. Like, it's a lot of times, you know, people act out because, you know, they, for whatever reason, right? But then, you know, people realize that there are people that care about them, you know, is we can really come back. And yeah, that's amazing. And
yeah, no, it's great, you know, and I'm very grateful for everybody that, you know, helped. Raise me essentially, right, because some of these coaches still did really good things, like in terms of like from a technical standpoint too. Like, you know, Coach Bob had a great top riding system, and he was like, let me show you how to throw legs,
right,
and break the person down as they're building the base. You put this leg in there and you have a cross body ride situation, and he would do it to me and like pound me, you know, shoving my mat into the floor and stuff. And then I was like, okay, this is what it feels like getting it done to me. And he would teach me afterwards, like, hey, this is how you do it. Of course, most of the time he's just teaching the room, right? But if I asked him a question, it's like, hey, man, can you show me this after practice? Like, you'd always stick around and show me. You know, so I had great assistant coaches in the room in college, right? Coach Corey.
Right.
He was another one that led by example, taught me a lot of interesting wrestling stuff.
Right.
Coach Soto, right? He's another one. I remember a couple of the takedowns he showed me, right? Inside control, as they're switching in, you change levels and shoot. It's very timing-oriented technique, right?
Right.
So I picked, like, this technique from that guy, that technique from that guy, you know, and it's just a good coach. I remember, I can tell you right now, makes you want to be better, period.
Right.
And that motivation, like, man, I want to be better because this guy's putting in so much time. He cares about me.
Yeah.
That motivation alone can lead to much better results.
Right.
Right. It's not, this is how you do a front headlock, and this is the only way, and this is better than every other way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's not even that, you know?
Right. You have to be self-motivated. Yeah. And then having good senseis helps. And so on the other side of the Pacific, when you went to Japan, how was, I know you kind of mentioned that their style is not like very like on the opposite end from what you had in high school or college, like they're pretty hands off and whatnot. How was, did you meet any cool senseis there that impacted you a lot?
Yeah, so in high school, Kakushikan high school system is one of the best high school systems in the world for judo. You have 100 people on the mat,
right,
they're all in high school, and you have a bunch of coaches, and it's very, very fundamental oriented, right? So you're doing lots of drills, lots of nagakomi, lots of drills, lots of combinations, things like this, and they will teach you, right? They will teach you and fix, but it's very much generic still,
right?
And if you're on the team, if you're like a starter, then they'll put in a lot of time, but I wasn't one of those kids because obviously I'm just there.
You're just visiting.
For the summer,
yeah.
Right. So I'm not really getting that sort of direct hands-on teaching, but I would sit there and listen to what the coaches would say to a lot of the top athletes there.
Right.
And
right.
It wasn't very, very specific. It was very vague and general. right? For instance, pressure. They would say pressure on. Mm. So a lot of the times it's like, what? You just push into the person? It's like, you're not supposed to push in judo, right?
Right.
And I remember them, you know, asking that question specifically. And then one of the coaches was like, all right, come here. Let me show you something. If you have your elbows out and you're just pushing into the person, they're going to turn and throw you.
Right.
But if you could limit their ability to turn by controlling their collar hand,
then you can push, right?
Yeah, and then you bring your elbows together so there's no space for them to bring their body inside. Then you could push. That's what I mean by pressure,
right?
So that's what I'm saying, pressure. There was all these different things that would have to happen when they said one thing.
Mm.
Pressure on, they would say, right? Mm. And then I didn't really understand it until I asked.
I see.
Yeah.
Did they have a mentoring system going on too or something like that, like senpai kowai situation?
Oh, yeah, what? Yeah. Super hierarchical.
Right. Yeah. I see.
So, you know, you have the head coach who's barely says anything, right? The top dog in the room for the high school.
Right. Right?
They're just kind of sitting on the chair and then like, okay, we're doing this next. And they just kind of like hang out. And they have a bunch of younger coaches who were just out of college.
I see.
Those guys are young and tough and they just went through the university system. So they're unbelievably good. And they're, you know, wrestling with all the kids and throwing them around and then being a lot more hands-on. And that's the guy I learned from, Miyamoto. He was an awesome guy.
He
was telling me about this pressure thing. And then he would say, like, okay, yeah, you're pressuring. They can't turn, so they push back, right? And that's when you move to the side and do, you know, sasai or something. And as their posture is being broken, right, as they're, oh, shoot, that's when you adjust to better position.
I see. Right?
So, like, it was incredible how he did it. You know, and he would show me and I would work out with him and he would just put tons of pressure on me and there's no space for me to turn.
So you can't throw him.
So I can't throw him. So I'm like, man, this is a huge pain in the ass. And then I drive back and then he's immediately going for something.
Right.
Off balance, boom, advantage. And then as soon as he's winning in position, he would slam me.
Right.
No mercy. Big Osoto, big Harai, no mercy. You know, like... And it's like, holy moly.
Right.
Like, how do you stop that? You know, and then you get back up and he's right back in your face putting pressure. You know, pressure, forward. And you know the formula at this point. And it's just one segment of what he does, right?
Right.
But you're like eating it day in and day out. And I worked out with this guy, you know, almost every day. Mm. And he's literally just ragdolling me with using the same stuff over and over. You know what I mean? So it's like I'm like in there trying to figure it out. And now I'm trying that same sort of pattern on other kids, high school kids, middle school kids, right? So this coach may not have specifically said, hey, do this, do that. Like he kind of gave me this idea, right? And he would do that to me over and over.
I see.
So I'm receiving it, trying to figure out how to defeat it. And I'm learning it now trying to do it to other people.
I see.
Right?
That
was a very, very good, I guess, teaching methodology.
Right.
You know, and some people care about their students. They want to teach them this way. But the coach has to know how these kids learn. And,
right.
Whether he knowingly did this or not, I don't really know. Right. And then you have to have your learnability.
Right.
How do you learn? How do you learn the best way? And this is the way that I kind of learned, you know?
That's a good segue into my next question. Kind of on the mental side. We talked about this in an earlier episode, but it's a grueling experience just going through the whole system, and I'm sure kids, you know, not all kids could adjust to that. But like, how did the whole coaching staff kind of handle that side of things? Like, kind of like kids, you know, feeling worn down, I guess, you know, not being able to keep up in a way. What did that ever happen?
Yeah, you know, because the season would begin and you hear about kids running away and stuff like that because they're young. They start these kids, elementary school champions, they recruit them into the middle school program. The middle school program is full throttle, right?
Right.
High school program, full throttle. You're on that track of being the best of the best. They're trying to pump out Olympic medalists through this pipeline.
Right.
You know? So it's really no joke. And because they've already recruited some of the best kids from the nation, right? You don't really have, I don't want to say laggards, but people who are in the Kokushikan system.
It's kind of filtered out already.
You're already getting the cream of the crop. You know, I remember this kid, Yokota, he was like 13 years old, benching 300 pounds, you know, 150 kilos. Like, it's unbelievable. You know, he's like 5'10", you know, 200 pounds. And he's like 13 years old and he's like benching, you know, like crazy amount of weight. I'm like, how is this even possible?
Right, right.
You know, and it was insane, right? So you never really saw too much of that.
I see.
There would be kids who would walk on, who would say like, oh, Kukushkan I know has the best judo program. I'm here academically, but I want to join the judo team.
Mm.
And those kids would never be able to keep up.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, those they cut from a different cloth almost, right? And these kids would work really hard because they're doing that full time. It's not like, oh, I'm going to learn this and major in that and go to college and study that. No, they're there to do judo. Their path in life is already set for them.
Right.
My daddy did judo. I was a champ in elementary school. I'm here. I'm going to be the best judo player in the world. Right?
Right.
So, and you know, they're very, very dependent on the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to work hard to prove to the coach, like, hey, I'm worth teaching. Hey, I'm worth you looking at.
Right.
So they're always, always, always pushing hard. I remember this one kid got like heat stroke.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Twice in 1 week. Like he's pushing himself so hard. He was a lightweight from Hokkaido. And he was like 140 pounds, but he was working, outworking everybody. Outworking everyone in the room. And then one day he's training and he's training. Coach would always make an example. I'm like, hey, this kid works hard. That kid works hard.
Right.
And he would just straight up say, like, he's not very good, but he's gonna be good.
Because he works hard, yeah.
Yeah, and people would like kind of make fun of him a little bit, like you're not that good.
Right.
Why do you work hard? Why even bother? You're never gonna be good. You know, kids are mean.
Yeah,
right?
Teenagers.
And then one day, he's pushing himself. Everyone knows this kid is pushing himself and he just freaking collapses.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, they take him to the hospital. He comes back in the next day.
He trained again?
He walked into the room, but he wasn't allowed to train.
Oh, okay.
2 or 3 days, he's going light, you know, he's like drilling and stuff. And the coach is like, hey, man, seriously, take it easy.
Yeah.
Right. And it takes a lot for a coach
to say that, right?
Yeah. And then he's back in the room, you know, full throttle 4 or 5 days in. And then he does another one of these and just like falls over.
Oh, my God.
And then I remember the coach brought everyone in and was like, listen, that's how hard you have to work, right? If you're working hard because, right? And then you're saving energy for later, like you have to deplete yourself every single round, every single match.
Yeah.
Right. That's how hard you have to work. Like, that's the standard for everybody in this goddamn room. Like, if you're not working that hard, right, you're never going to be anybody. You're going to always forever be, right? Mm-hmm. It was like a great speech. Only. It was a great speech. And I was like, and he's just at the hospital. Something amazing happened too. Like, he came back and he kept working hard and everybody in the room was like, you know, kind of, you know, was like, yeah, this guy's not that good. But now all of a sudden they were inspired by him.
Right.
So the room was different after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was different. And I don't know if he ever became very good.
Yeah.
I don't know. And that's the sad part about training judo at a
young
system
age,
like that in Japan. Like you can blow your knee out and be done. No one knows you.
Right.
Right. But, you know, you coming up in that collectivist group of like everyone's pushing each other to the top and driving each other to be better, right? Everyone's inspiring each other and the coaches are in there and fundamentals and, right? Everyone's vying for the top spot in the coach's eyes, right? And once you get there, the coach is like teaching you everything. And, you know, Suzuki and those guys talk about it too.
Right.
Suzuki, Saito sensei, right? Saito was an Olympic legend and Suzuki was an Olympic legend. And Suzuki would say like, man, after practice, right, the coach would say, hey, come over to my house. They had like a dojo. Obviously, you can't do that nowadays, but like, come over to my house. There's a dojo in the house. And then they would just do judo till like 11 p.m., you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's what it takes. That's
sometimes one in the morning, coach would be like, hey, listen, I have this thing I need to show you. Osoro, come to the dorms right now. I'll meet you in the dorms. And it's like 1 in the morning, they're doing judo. That's a little crazy.
Right.
You know? But like, if you're the best of the best, right, you're the top.
Right.
And you have the best coach in the world, and then you have the work ethic, and then the coach is caring about you, and they have that, and something like that can potentially work.
Mm-hmm.
But most people can't handle that kind of volume.
Right.
I know I can't, you know? I don't care. Like, if one of my wrestling coaches is like, hey, man, 1 in the morning, we're going to go for a run. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm sorry, coach. I love you, man. I'm going to go. I'll see you at practice tomorrow.
Right. So,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of... Yeah, that whole system is pretty crazy, but I mean, I guess that's what it takes to stay at top. Like,
and people romanticize about that kind of a training and that kind of a relationship, but you know, truthfully, it's not for everybody. You don't get a lot out of that sometimes, you know, because it depends on your learning style too.
Right.
Right. A lot of the times it is a technical situation where you need to learn technical stuff.
Yeah. And then they it works for them because they pick the right, like the students who have that kind of learning style.
Right. Yeah, yeah, you know, we're also talking about people who are already coming in with a very big skill set.
Right, right.
If you're an elementary school champ, you're 12 years old, you're in sixth grade, right? You've already done judo for 12 years.
Right.
Yeah, something like that, 10 years or whatever it is. And yeah. Then, you know, you've already had coaching at the, you know, the city dojo level. You already had you know, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday judo regimen. You're already in shape. You're already strong. You're coming in with a very good foundation. Mm. Now you're doing judo 6-7 hours a day. Right, man. With the best coaches. Now you're learning their style, their ideas.
Right.
Right.
Dang.
Yeah, so it's very different, you know?
So now, by
it's
this...
It's nice to see that.
Yeah. And now this, by this time, you're like competing and whatnot. So, yeah. You know, I'm sure you've met a lot of mentors and senseis along the competitive circuit. Maybe from your teammates, you know, a lot of advice. So how, any cool experience from that?
Yeah, you know, I would go to these like tournaments, international tournaments that would take part of these camps, right? And then I would see guys on the team, the U.S. team or the Argentinian team or the Cuban team. And then sometimes I'll just ask them like, hey, what is that thing that you did? Can you show me? Mm. And half the time they can't really show me. They don't really know what they're doing. Like you just, Uchimata, you go like this and you stick the leg in between, you know? Right. That's like,
yeah.
Like a lot of these guys don't know what they're doing. They're just good intuitively.
Right, right.
Because they've done so much judo. But there's some people in the mix that can actually teach you stuff.
Right. And they would teach you stuff.
Yeah, they would teach me.
Yeah.
I remember like, this is early on when, before Travis Stevens was the Travis Stevens.
Yeah.
We were drilling at a tournament somewhere. We're both like teenagers or something like that. Maybe he was a little bit. Yeah, we were both like teenager. Maybe we were like in our early 20s and I'm doing Ochi. And he goes, hey, man, I do Ochi like this. And the way he showed it to me, I was like, oh. Right?
Yeah,
different. Because I had like a little bit too much distance in our upper body. So he's like, I pull him in, lock him in, and then I stick the leg in and then I drive. Right? Mm. I try never to have my arms extended when I go Ochi.
Right, right.
I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know? And then... didn't think much of it, but then I was like, okay, you know, that's an idea, right? And then I'm talking to this kid, Brad Bolin. He does this, you know, bow and arrow choke, and we joke, we call it the Bolin arrow choke, because he's so good at it. And, you know, I was like, hey, how do you do that thing? And it was unbelievable, right? It's like collar, you sit him, and the person resists the sit, and then he switches direction, goes to the bow and arrow choke.
Maybe,
so
maybe he alternates between...
I should, yeah. He alternates between, I probably did already. He alternates between sitting, choke, sitting, choke, sitting, choke. So it's like, kazushi, choke, right? And every time you go to base out to not get turned out, you have to spread your limbs. And as soon as your hands go out wide, the neck opens up and then you're going for that collar choke. So then now they're fighting for the thing and now they're locked in tight. So now you're trying to sit him. So they have to open up their limbs to base out.
I see.
And he was the master at this. Dude, I will never forget, man. We were in like Venezuela or something fighting in a tournament. He's fighting in Brazil. And this Brazilian is beating the hell out of him. He'd probably thrown him probably 6 or 7 times. Never on his back. And before Yuko's and Wazari's.
Right.
They weren't Wazari's. Yuko's weren't cumulative.
Right.
This guy must have thrown Brad probably like 6 times. And then Brad
caught him. Oh, nice. Nice. yeah.
And then I remember him teaching me this and it's like, wow, you know, his choke is really, really good. He choke everybody with it. So something like that, you know, that I've really tried to make my own. Did I master that technique and use it successfully in competition? No, because I wasn't very good at the Nawaza. Like I just didn't really care much for winning in Nawaza. Like just because I had my biases towards being on my feet.
Yeah.
Right. And I mostly used Nawaza as a means to just burn clock.
Right.
Burn the clock and rest because I didn't have the best gas tank, right?
Right.
I have a lot of gaps in my judo system. So, you know, I would be tired and I would just use that time to rest by just sitting him, just putting weight on him, right? So did I ever use it successfully as a part of my system? Not really, but I know it now, you know, and thanks to that interaction with him and I really internalized it. And if I ever do, you know, am in a place to really teach somebody to get to the next level, like maybe they could take this knowledge and use it and be successful with it many times over. Right.
So on the technical side, you guys always shared and like internationally, like even in training camps, everyone shares their
teammates and things like that, right? And there's a little bit of like, okay, you know, Brad goes to this dojo, Jason Moore's in school, and they're, you know, my, their number two guy in my division is, you know, the guy that goes to school. So there's a little bit of that, obviously. But I would ask everyone and anyone, like, what is that thing that you did? Hey, can you show me that thing that you, how did you do that Tomonaga? You know? And half of the time I'm expecting like, I just go like this, you know? It works.
Yeah.
90% of the time it's almost like that.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get something out of it, right? Because no two Tomonaga at the high level is the same.
Right.
It really isn't.
I see.
You know, and then there's a ton of context surrounding it. Like, what is the entry? What is like sort of the misdirection that's happening?
Right.
Right. What is the timing? How is he cloaking his attack? Because if you know it's coming, it's much easier to defend. Right.
Right.
So all these different things, like I would ask, and sometimes I'm not even asking, like a lot of the times at these international training camps, it's like lightweights on. They're doing their Vandori. 5 minutes goes by. Okay. Time. Next heavyweights on. 73 and above go out there. Okay, lightweight's on. So like when the lightweights are going, I'm standing on the side. You just can't have everyone fighting at the same time.
Right, right.
So during that time, I would like watch all the lightweights.
And then try to soak in whatever you see.
Yeah, like Aaron Kunihiro was another one. We were on the circuit at the same time. He had a very, very like fast moving Sanagi, lapel, Korean Sanagi situation. So I would ask him all the time, like, hey, how are you doing that? You know, could never do it.
I see.
But I would always ask him.
Yeah.
You know, and he would do his best to kind of explain to me, and I would never be able to do it. But
right. So how, and then, so that on the technical side, that's what happened, a lot of sharing. But I'm sure you guys traveled a lot together, you know, Travis, Kunihiro, and all of the people. And I'm sure there was some tough times that you had to get through together. Like maybe someone lost an important tournament and all. So what did you guys have? What kind of experience did you guys share in that way? Like mentoring each other, pushing each other, as like senseis to each other, basically.
Yeah, you know, it's tricky, right? Because people lose a match, they want to be left alone a lot of the times, more often than so. And Travis, he didn't want to be spoken to. Right? So it's like he's cutting weight, don't talk to him.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
He'll literally look at the person like, why are you talking to me? Don't talk to me. Yeah, and just like walk away, right? So there is a little bit of that, you know, and you support each other, especially you're on these trips. And a lot of the camaraderie happened between, you know, the time that you're stepping on the scale, right, when you're cutting weight. Because you're sitting in the sauna and you're like, how many do you have? You have 4 pounds, or 5 pounds, you know, whatever. So that's sort of the time that you'd kind of develop that bond. And then, you know, after you lose, sometimes like a kid just comes over and put their hand on your shoulder or something like that. You know, they get it. Right? They get it.
Right.
Right? So a lot of the times it's like you don't need like that, you know, overt pep talk of like, hey man, everything's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're kind of all in it together. And if you're on the US team, more times than not, 90% of the people on that that team has just suffered a loss in that competition. Right? Because Team USA is not too successful on the international front.
Right, right.
Yeah, so there was a lot of that, a lot of camaraderie in that sense, but you know, you kind of got it. It's tricky because when you're on these teams, you don't have your home coach.
Right, right.
You have a national coach.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, a lot of the times I moved to Jimmy Pedro. Jimmy Pedro was a big influence in my judo style because he was my coach. I lived at the training center. I lived in Jimmy Pedro's house. Right. He has an athlete house. So when he would be on the team, when he was the coach, that's great because he's seen me practice day in and day out. But you get a Jason Morris on, you know, coaching that team. Like, he doesn't know what I do. He doesn't really pay attention to what I'm doing. You get another coach. Right. You develop these little relationships with these coaches too because you go to all these different tournaments. It's like, oh, he coached me at that tournament. He coached me at that tournament. But I've had coaches on those things like, hey, go for, you know, drop tayo. Go for drop tayo. It's open. And I'm like, I don't freaking do that move. I've never done that move in my life. Like, how am I going to do this to this guy now for the first time ever? Like, you know, I'm not like saying that to him while I'm doing the match. But
I see.
Yeah.
I didn't think about the fact that, you know, the national coaches come and go like for different trips.
Generally. So Jimmy Pedro was great because I lived there.
Right.
Right. And he was my coach and he taught me his entire gripping system, right, which is a big thing that I was lacking at that time. So I listened to him, right? I learned it. I internalized it. I'm in the room with all the guys, you know, Travis, Kayla. And so I'm like kind of living that whole experience with them. And they're already very good at what Jimmy Page was teaching. So I'm trying to emulate that. All right. And Jimmy's in the room. And because I was like relatively closer in weight to him, and he would be like, hey, come on, kid. Come on, Shintaro, let's go. And he would, you know, beat me up with his left side tie-o situation. Right. And he would be on these trips with us. So that was a really good experience. And I loved the way he coached.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, if you don't know, his father, Big Jim Sr., right? He was another one that's a great legendary coach who produced Jimmy. Right. And a lot of the stuff that I learned from Jimmy Pedro, Jimmy Pedro learned from his father.
I see.
So there's definitely a big trickle down situation there. And, you know, Big Jim was a tough, like, you have to be tough. You have to go out there. You have to do your very best. That kind of a coach too, right? So he was a motivational speaker. He was a great communicator. He was a great technician. And that, obviously, Jimmy Pedro did really well for himself.
Right.
With a couple of, like, medals. So then Jimmy has a similar teaching style and a similar coaching style where he's very invested in his athletes. And he has his speech, his motivational stuff. And now there's all these people learning from him who are eyes wide open, ears open, like absorbing everything. And I was very fortunate to be sort of a part of that.
So, that so he's another, I guess the theme is that your sensei, your coach, has, you know, if they care about the students and whatnot, then this, it's like a more like a symbiotic relationship, I guess. Like the students take in better and then it'll push the coaches and all.
Dude, I always believe, like, I can't coach anyone that doesn't want to be coached.
Right.
So it's a two-way street, seriously. And you can be the best coach in the world, but if you have a kid that doesn't want to be there, they're there because their parents are forcing them, then that kid's not going to learn.
Right.
So it has to be a two-way street. You have to have a coachable kid, right, who respects you. Right. And I've had people who tried to be my coach who I just didn't respect what they knew. You know, I've had a lot of that too. Like we're talking mostly good instructors, right? And sometimes instructors that lack in technical skill, they made up for just in this way of speaking and motivating and caring and, you know, me wanting to do well and perform for them, all this stuff. Right. But then I've had coaches who I was like, man, this guy doesn't know anything. I don't respect him. I don't like him. I'm not going to associate myself with this person.
Right.
You know, I had that many times too.
I see.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not just that. But Jimmy was great. Jimmy, Big Jim Sr. was great because when I was living at the athlete center, Big Jim Sr. would teach the 6 a.m. classes. He would teach the elite training class, which was 6 in the morning to 7.
No, because
it was 6 to 7 and then conditioning from 7 to 8 or something. So it was like 2 hours in the morning. So I'd see Big Jim every single day.
I see.
Right. And he was great. He was spectacular.
He was more, he was more on the, was he more of a technical coach or more of an inspirational coach?
He did a little bit of the both. He did a little both, right? And he would tell me, give me advice. And, you know, I remember like he was telling Jimmy Sr. and Jimmy Pedro said to me one day, like, hey, my father called me and told me that you were putting work out there. You were putting out some work out there. You were training really hard this morning. Good job. And then that meant so much to me. You know, I was like, oh, man, Big Jim Sr. said I'm working hard, you know?
Because you respect him so much.
I respect him so much. And he has a very high hurdle of, like, this working hard.
I see.
You know, and I've always been kind of branded as, like, sort of a lazier athlete. So I've heard people say stuff about me like, oh, Higashi could have been good, but he was just too lazy, you know?
Really?
And this, yeah, there's some truth in that. And I've heard big champions say that about me, too.
Big champions, like who?
Yeah, I've heard champions. I don't want to say. But like, I've heard champions say like, ah, he'll never be because he's lazy. He's too weak. He's in the wrong division. All this stuff. So, So, and you know, some of that's true, right? I'm not working as hard as the people who are known to be working hard, right? I work hard to my own standard of working hard. But when Jim Sr. said that he was working out hard, and then Jim Pedro, who I respect, who's a world champion, who's an Olympic medalist, said, hey, kid, I heard you've been working hard. It made me like, it just lit a fire under me. Like, oh yeah, all right. These guys think I'm working hard. It's like, I am working hard. I am a hard worker. You know what? I deserve it. I'm going to be a champion now, right? It's just like this like.
I mean, that's important too.
You
got to have that champion mentality.
And then, you know, when they're sitting in the coach, I remember at Nationals in 2011 or something, he's like, you outwork these guys, right? You can go out there. You're better than them. You're going to beat them, you know? And then I'm listening and I'm like, yeah, right? And then, you know, well, nationals that year, right? And,
nice.
You know, that those words really, like, you hold on to it.
Right, right.
You know, because you respect them, you believe them, and you trust them.
Right.
So if they're saying that you've outworked them, that you're better than them, it's like, I must be.
Right, right. Nice.
But so, they're honest. They're honest.
Well, that's why it matters.
I value that the most, yeah. Because I've had coaches before fighting, you know, I fought many top 10 guys in the world. I spoke about it last week. Fighting the number one guy in the world. And I've had coaches tell me, like, you got this, man. You're better than him. And I was sitting there like, man, what? Like, I don't believe you.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, what do you mean I'm better than him? This guy's number one in the world. I'm like 48th or something. Like, I have no business being on the mat with him even.
Yeah.
But I've had coaches tell me, like, Shintari's number one in the world. He's very good, you know?
Yeah.
You might catch him with something.
You appreciated that honesty more. You might catch him with this.
Yeah. It's like, you know, he's coming over the back. I remember, I think it was Jimmy that said, like, he's tall. He's going to come over with the left hand.
Yeah.
You could duck it shooting on the legs and maybe you put him to his back.
Right.
You know, and I did. I ducked it, ducked the arm, shot in, took him down. I didn't score.
Over underpass?
No, I didn't go over underpass.
Oh,
I
you did?
Yeah, I didn't really have that over underpass back then.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, yeah, but it was like one of those, I appreciate that honesty.
I you know? See. You did. I think you kind of, you're on that side too. You never try to kind of fluff people up by saying, oh, you're better than them. You outwork them, whatever.
Sometimes I believe it. Sometimes if I believe it, I'll tell them.
Right.
I'll tell my athlete that. Like, dude, you're better than this guy. I don't see a world where this guy, on your best day, you'll ever lose to this person.
Right, right.
Right? And if they're super nervous about it, maybe that's the thing that they need to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the beauty of being a good coach, right? Understanding like what this person really needs to hear in that time.
Right.
Sometimes you need a person going, walking up to the tunnel, going into that match. Sometimes you just need to get the guy off the mind off the match.
Right.
Distract them, like talk about stuff, everything outside of judo, because all the judo and the preparations have already been done.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can learn now.
Right.
And that's like one of the things that really bother me the most about a lot of these coaches. Not a lot of them, some of them. They're like trying to give him advice and teach him new things in the line. Like, yeah, the guy goes for like this. You got to go for that. It's like, man, if you're trying to teach him and try to coach him technically now, like it's too late.
Right. Because your body won't do it. Yeah.
Body won't do it. You know, maybe they've read it, done it, watched film, and now they're there and just reminding them, maybe. Mm. And maybe that's what the athlete needs. Who knows?
Right. Right. Right.
But it has to be like, this is my need. My athlete needs that. Like that has to be a thing.
Right.
You know?
So now, let's say, you know, keep going on that thought process. Now, you've had a lot of good senseis and some bad ones, I guess.
Yeah.
But so from now, you're on the other side. You're a sensei to a lot of people now, like especially through YouTube and stuff. So what do you, as a sensei, what do you strive for? And do you like... And you also mentioned how it's a two-way street between the sensei and the students. How do you approach that? You know, kind of brief touch on that. Like, how does it feel to be on the other side now?
Good. You know, I like it. I really like it. My goal isn't to, I've told you before many times, but like to my audience. Right?
Yeah.
My goal isn't to like, oh, I want to make the most amount of champions and I want my name to go down as the best coach on this planet. Mm. Yeah, that's not really my goal. That's not really what I'm trying to do, right? I'm trying to teach judo, yes, right? I love teaching judo. I like being a part of this thing, right? I want to teach people who I want to teach that want to be taught.
Right.
That's first and foremost, right? And YouTube is really nice because I have access to more people outside the walls now. And then now people are seeking me out through, hey, I saw your video. Hey, I bought your Fanatics video DVD. Hey, can I come train with you? And like that sort of kind of nice, you know?
Right.
And everyone kind of says this, but the people who really want to do it will show up and then will keep following up with me.
Right.
I'm not asking people to do that. But it's really nice to teach somebody who will want to be taught.
Right.
And they appreciate it. And I've put so much stuff out there on YouTube now and videos, this and that. So it's like now people can, I don't have to repeat myself too often.
Right, right.
People, like I have a kid, like we both know Luca. Mm. He watches all my stuff online.
Nice.
So sometimes they'll say like, hey, I watched this thing. I listened to this thing. I saw this other thing. What do you think about that? There's a little bit of discrepancy there. And we could talk about it.
Uh-huh.
Right? Which is nice because I don't have to take everything I know and just throw it at the person. He's already sort of consuming a lot of my ideas
mm-hmm.
pre talking to me.
Right.
So they already have sort of this base knowledge through what I've already produced out there. Now they're coming back and now we could talk about it on a deeper level as opposed to me going through the basics of put your hand here, put your hand there.
Right.
So that makes it very fun for me.
I see.
Because now we're talking about the whys of what we're doing.
And then,
why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? And then am I able to clearly, concisely teach this person?
Yeah.
And you could generally tell, right? If I'm like looking into the kid's eye and I'm like, hey, this is why you do this. And then they're like, okay, I'm not being concise. I'm not clearly communicating to this person.
Right.
So that makes it more interesting. And then sometimes he's asked questions like, hey, how do I do this Korean Seinagi? I'm going like this. It's not working. Okay, but it's harder for me to troubleshoot some of the stuff. I'm not specifically watching him actually do it in live.
Right.
So now I'm paying a little bit more attention. It's like this kid deserves my attention because he's working out hard. He's right. He deserves it. Okay, now I will watch and learn. And now I'm trying to figure it out why he's succeeding, why he's not succeeding, what he's doing right and wrong. So that makes it more fun, right?
And then
as I'm supposed to give him a generic answer like, oh, you're not going hard enough, right? That's bad coaching, I think.
Right.
So now I'm teaching this, and now I have to question myself, like, do I know this technique well enough to be able to troubleshoot this kid's Korean Seinagi and actually teach him? Right? Do I have the ability to say it's not working because that's the only thing he's going for now?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the other person knows this.
Right.
Are there the same types of threats? The one hand, like, is he threatening this? Is he shaking? He's moving. Is he in good position? Mm. All those things. And is he doing it in conjunction with all the stuff that he already does?
Mm.
Okay, what's his entry like? How close are his hips? Is his hips close enough? Right. That's a very generic thing that can part of the troubleshooting of Korean Seinagi.
Right.
So that makes it fun. That makes me question my knowledge too, which makes me grow, which is great. On the opposite side of that, it's like coaching someone else and like talking about them and motivating them properly and just like changing them and shaping their sort of being, right? That is fulfilling in itself because I get to make a difference in this person's life the way my coaches made a difference in my life before.
Right.
And of course, my father is the biggest one. Right?
Yeah.
I know he's there. I know he cares for me. I know he loves me. I can reach out to him anytime.
Right.
So similarly, I want to be able to give that to someone, but I don't want to give it to just anybody. Right, you could call me anytime.
Yeah,
ask me about judo. You have access to me 24/7. Even before our friendship, even as a coach athlete.
Yeah,
right. Back many times, like you felt when you were in the city, you were able to rely on me.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and like I like giving that to the people who I believe deserve it.
Yeah, I think that's what you emphasize is really important. Like the two-way street thing. You know, like right now, Luca, I'm so happy to see him like growing as a judo player and then as a person, like he's being more cerebral, like thinking about different things. And now because you show that you care about him, he's going to give more to you. Like he's going to try harder. You know, all that. And same with me too. You know, I really my New York experience really revolved around you and judo, you know, and we didn't really, it was like you are a mentor figure while I was there. I mean, you are still, you know, I always talk. Yeah, of course. You know, because honestly, I don't know if you remember, but when I first moved to the city, man, I was just like, I'm not smart.
You went through a bad breakup, and all this stuff.
Yeah. And I like that. I really like that, you know, you were a teacher that cared. And, you know, I'm glad that we could grow the friendship. And we're at the point, like, now every time I go to a different dojo at Michigan, I report back to you. I text you right away.
It's nice. I like hearing about it. You know, I like hearing about it. And, because judo is it's a tool for self-improvement, right? And that's what it's about, you know, martial arts, self-improvement. Mm. You know, people get too focused on this, oh, I'm going to be a champion. I want to be in the Olympics and the this and that. It's like, forget all that nonsense.
Yeah.
It's like you're doing it because you want to be a better person.
Yeah.
That's really the ultimate thing.
Yeah. Right?
And maybe you choose to be a competitor, but if you're only, I only feel good if I'm going out there and winning, you're not really being a full martial artist.
Mm-hmm.
right? That's just my opinion. Right. And I think there's ways to approach it, and having a good coach who kind of can guide you on this path of self-improvement, right? I think is a good thing. And, you know,
yeah,
I learned from my students too, man. You know, you coming through the system and you learning and doing your judo, and, you know, I've picked up some techniques from you, that one hand Korean tayo. I'll always watch out for that.
I guess I kind of brought that into KBI.
Especially, you know, if you're a Korean person, I'm just gonna just immediately make that connection with Peter's one-handed left Korean tayo, right? You know, right versus right. Like, grab that sleeve first.
Yeah. I feel like now I can't do it anymore. Everyone knows about this now.
I mean, if they listen to this podcast, they know about it now. Right?
Yeah.
You catch a lot of people with it. You want to put that out there, first exchange, third exchange, fourth exchange. Like, even if they know you do it, right first, right, they get comfortable putting that hand on first.
Yeah.
You might catch them. You could always surprise somebody with it.
Yeah.
You know?
I do. Whenever I go to a new dojo, I usually catch some people with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels good. Well, there was, you know, thanks for telling us all this, you know, great senseis you've met throughout your life.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed listening to these cool stories. I hope, you know, everyone can find someone, a good sensei like this, you know, one way or another.
Yeah.
Like Shintaro said, martial arts is more than just winning. So any parting words to the listeners?
No, not really to my listeners. I mean, yes to my listeners, but thank you for all the people who've ever taught me.
Right.
This is the most important thing, I think, about martial arts, right? When you see the person doing judo out there winning, like that, you see that person as a champ, right?
Right.
It's not that 90% of their judo comes from here, 10% comes from there, you know, this, and the mentality side, like 30% comes from their father. Right? It's a combination of all the people you ever interact with in judo.
Right.
Right? They had a lot of people had part. So, you know, really understanding that, I think, is really important.
Right.
You know, so don't get too cocky. You know, oh, I'm a champ. You know, I did all this by myself. It's like, no one did it by themselves, especially not in grappling.
Right. Right.
Right. So especially not in martial arts. And you're doing it because, right, you want to improve your life. And there's like an overall collective good that's also happening when you take part of this sort of athletics, right?
Right.
And it's very important to remember that and to be a good person and share some of your knowledge.
Yeah.
To the others.
Yeah.
So we could all sort of grow together, you know, and that's my message.
Lift each other up. Preachy. Yeah. No, it's fine. Your podcast. All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you,
everyone. Yeah. Yep. I just want to say we just hit 10,000 listen since we started. So thanks for the support, and, you know, hopefully we can grow even farther. Yeah.
And
thank
you. If you ever want to bother somebody at 2 a.m, Peter has an Instagram that is attended to 24/7.
Yeah. I'm all about the likes. Yeah. All right. Yep. Well, thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.